like to welcome everybody to our next episode of the cause of Two Men in the Bible Fighting the Cosmic Battle. It's episode 13, I believe, Bob. It's, you know, this is, you know, time flies when you're having fun, they say.
That's right.
I don't know whether I'm going to be able to keep track of all the numbers of, you know, what episode
that I know
we're
once
on.
We get... Yeah, it's already getting hard to know what
right,
number
we're
going to
be at episode 2,562. At some point, here soon. But today we're going to be going through Genesis chapter 16, verses 1 through 16. And again, some very important concepts that are in the Word, in the truth, in the words that God inspired Moses to put down, and really remembering, you know, who the writer is, Moses, and as you and I talk about, you know, what a great writer.
He is good. You know, think about it, even in sales terms, right? The guy wrote the number one bestseller ever since there was a printing press by Gutenberg back in Germany. However, he was even the number one bestseller before that. So ever since he wrote it, the guy's the number one bestseller for the last, you know, 3,500 years. His book's number one. They don't print it on the charts. And not to their shame, they disqualify the Bible from that. Because it's you could understand why it's not. But no, if this was recorded on the New York Times bestseller list, it'd be number one every year. Every year. Throughout the world. Not just, you know, in America. Or every year he is number one. And so, yeah, he can write. Which, by the way, if you ever watch one of these, I just feel the freedom to be myself on these podcasts, you know, these stupid Discovery Channel. I love Discovery Channel, by the way.
I do, too.
I like that.
I have to
but
confess.
But half the time, they are out to lunch, man. I remember watching this guy, they'd quote some scholar, you know, and he was saying, well, we have an idea that perhaps some of the ancient Israelites could read and write. Well, yeah, I would say Moses did a pretty good job of reading and writing, you know.
And without one grammar lesson, correct?
Yeah, and by the way, there are comments within the Pentateuch, again, that means the first five books of the Bible, to, like, write this on your doorpost, you know, write, if you're dealing with divorce, write her a bill of divorce, a certificate. They could read and write. That's within the Pentateuch itself. Moses expects them to read and write. Slaves coming out of Egypt, right? The Egyptians had already built the pyramids. These are not illiterate people. We tend to think, you know, the fact that we have cars and we've flown to the moon and so on. And that means those guys back then were dumb. No, they weren't dumb. In fact, in most ways, they were much smarter than we are. They didn't have TV to dumb them down.
Right.
You know?
Right.
They were very sharp. They could read and write.
Well, as we talk a lot, you know, what was, as a first grade...
What was your curriculum? First grade, Bible. Second grade, Bible. Third grade, Bible. And they knew the material.
Well, they did. And you know, get more mature... I don't want to say get older, but as I get more mature, I really see that it's learning the material, not just reading it to say you did it, but reading it as a text.
Yeah, with
to
understanding.
Learn.
You know, the best way, Jamie, that happened in my own life, as an analogy, if you'll indulge me for 1 second, it's been maybe 4 or 5 years now since the movie The Incredibles. Right? Mm-hmm. You seen that one? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good one. But anyway, Pixar, you know, does this, The Incredibles. Well, I often like to, I just treasure my private time, right? Because my private time, to me, is me and God. Mm-hmm. You know, I love my wife. We are one flesh. Yeah, I'm not saying that. Sophia's my daughter. I love being with those guys. But nothing compares to being alone with God. So, you know, this big movie comes out, and I do not like, you know, modern marketing and so on, you know, so, all right, you guys go see the movie. And and I'll sit here. I'll be with God, and you guys come home and tell me about it. So they go see the movie, and I asked Sophia, at that time, she's maybe six. All right, Sophia, what's the movie about? Oh, the big, strong guy beat up the bad guy. Okay. Is that accurate? Yeah. Okay, that's what happens in the movie. I said, Kathy, tell me about the movie. Oh, well, it's, the constraints of society. A guy in midlife crisis and society's suppressing his abilities and they've constrained his ability to achieve and so on. You're going, was that even the scene? And it was. Then you go watch the movie and you understand what each of them are talking about, right? I know what Sophia's saying. Yeah, the hero won and beat up the bad guy. Yes, his real enemy was society, keeping him back. They were both saying the same thing, but mostly, so the point of the analogy is this. Many today read the Bible like a six-year-old. They can tell you some items about what happened, but they don't understand the deeper themes in the scriptures, which are there for anyone to see. Mm-hmm. And my passion is that people would begin to read the Bible as an adult. Okay, read it like Kathy going to a movie. Tell me what's really going on here, not just, Jesus beat up on the devil or whatever. I understand. And that is huge. And if you want to bottom line it like that, I understand. But give me an adult reading. Right back to our analogy of sitting with God in a chair. Mm-hmm. Imagine a chair big enough for the two of you. And you sit there and you're reading this Bible with him and he's going, he's got his finger out, going over the words, going, here's the deal. That's my passion for people, that they see the Word of God that way, that they feel like they're alone with him, understanding the story, such that when they look up from the page and look out the window into all of life, they can see it through God's eyes.
Well, and I'd like to pose a question for our listeners. How many people have you talked to throughout your life as a believer that have said, I just don't understand the Bible. I wish somebody could explain the Bible to me. Well, that's the purpose. I know that's your purpose for this podcast, Bob.
It is. And there's a, we can do our part. But the listener, the reader, you got to do your part. Mm-hmm. No one understands the scriptures, the words of God, apart from labor, right? He isn't going to beam it into your head.
There's no Bluetooth?
No, there's not. It's not a Bluetooth. You're going to have to do the work. But if you do the work, we will come alongside you and work with you, and you will get there. But it isn't going to happen if you don't pick up the book and do the labor. But what I want to encourage people is it's not a labor, a fruitless labor. It's a labor of love. Mm. If you believe God, necessarily you would love him. If you love him, you want to hear what he's got to say. And in order to do that, you would do the labor to understand it. That's a real believer to me. I've never met a person that I was very convinced of their faith that didn't hunger for the Word. Hunger. Just like we hunger for food, for the Word of God. Never met that.
Well, I know, Bob, as you know my story and where I was just a short year and a half ago, it really does become that, because when you realize where the truth is and who is going to be your truth teller and you realize his word and his teaching, you become hungry for that. And I think one of our conversations, I even put it that way, I said, Bob, I can't wait to read more.
Yeah. That's right.
With this new set of eyes that I have, I can't wait to read more.
That's right. It seemed like, I know some people know this story, but when I came to faith, as I came out of atheism, but when I came to faith as a 21-year-old, I sat down with the Bible. I mean, it took maybe 2 weeks, maybe, to read the Bible. right?
You read the Bible in 2 weeks?
Well, I mean, don't look at that as like some accomplishment. I mean, that was natural to me. You know, if this is really what God has to say, I need to know this. This is the most amazing thing in the world. That would be like asking a Star Wars guy, you know, you've watched all 7 episodes. Well, yeah. You know, how long did it take you to watch this? A day? I watched it straight through, you know? So, as like, I thought God wrote this. So, I was like, give me this thing. And, you know, I'm like a week away from graduating college. What else do I have to do? You know, I've just read from sunup to sundown every day. Let me see, what do you got to say? And I, for the life of me, I don't understand why everybody doesn't do that. You're kidding me. If you understand what this is, why wouldn't you do everything? And at that time, you know, I don't have family, I'm not married. I had the freedom to do that, but why wouldn't you do everything to read what God has said?
The truth.
Yeah.
The promises.
That's right.
You know, because it doesn't make you rich, as we've talked. It's not this magical potion, but there is such a sense, and I could just explain this from my standpoint, there's such a sense of comfort in His Word.
Yeah, like, that's exactly right, Jamie. You know, it's, you know, peace.
Mm-hmm.
It is a great way to describe it, but that's not just pie in the sky. That's not just metaphorical. As you know, I guess it's getting close to 2 years now. I mean, I was a millimeter away from dying.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's about, as the doctors explain it to me, and not often face to face, usually to my wife or to my father who called them, you know, ooh, this was, man, this was the widowmaker. You know, this had right. The worst, you know, 1 in 20 survived that. But going through that, you know, that barely registers on my radar screen. Literally, I kid you not. Whatever, you know, if God wants to take me now, I'm good. I am sorry that my daughter is only 8. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time, I'd like more time with her, but I'm sure you got a plan for her. It's okay. You just take me now. That's good. And he didn't. But my point is, there is total peace about that. You know what? Could you buy that somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
You think Bill Gates could buy total peace about death?
Can't be manufactured.
Only God supplies that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when you put the pedal to the metal, you know, that was shoe leather on the street. I'm fine. You know, I'm good if you want to take me. In fact, I wish you would. You know? I don't want to get out of here and I got to fill out these insurance forms and stuff. You know, it's fine. You know, take me now. But he didn't, so. And I don't know. I probably didn't qualify.
And as we get into chapter 16 today, I you know, we say it over and over, but you know, there are certain things that I think need to be brought up again and again. But it's this foundation, understanding the foundation of what is being put down in this first book of the Bible, and how understanding the parts that we've gone through and the chapters that we've gone through is really integral into the understanding of everything else that's going to go on. Because if this isn't true, then how can the rest of it be
true? Yeah, that's right. It's foundational. It's our metaphor that we've been using quite often. It's the canvas
right.
upon which everything else is written. And if you don't have that canvas, i.e. that background, you know, that foundational understanding, no reason to go forward. You know, it's very hard to get the implications of what's really going on. Unless you get, it's like anything. Here's a funny story. Since we're enjoying ourselves today, there was this day a couple years ago. I was at this, I was some like social function, and I am the biggest oddball at those things. I mean, I just don't fit in with crowds. So I couldn't wait to get out of there, and I had convinced two other people to go to a movie with me. Yeah, I had to bribe them. I couldn't just say, you know, let's leave. I had to say, oh, let's go see a movie. So we left early, and we went to the theater, but we were in a dispute about what we were going to see.
Right.
We were arguing the whole way. All we knew was we wanted to escape the party. So we get to the theater, and we buy our tickets, and I got to go to the restroom. And in the restroom, I forget what we had actually decided on what we're going to go see. So I come out, and I'm a lost sheep. You know, I'm like, what was it? And so I go in, you know how theaters, you can go in four or five different. So I go in what I assumed we had decided on. And I walk up and down, and I'm calling their names. You know, people are saying, like, shut up, you know?
It's like a Seinfeld episode.
Yeah. I'm walking through this theater, you know, and I can't contact them, you know? They're either silent and, you know, watching my my futility of trying to locate them, or they're not there. And I figure, you know, in my dulled mental capacity, I figure, well, they must be in the restroom, too, so I'll just wait here for them. So I sit down, and I start watching the thing, and I got no idea what's going on. You know, like, here's the girl, and she's in, you know, terrible trauma. She's pouring out her heart to this guy. I have no idea why she's doing that, what she's saying. 10 minutes go by, and the credits. It was the end of the movie. The credits come up, and I'm like, I have no idea what I just saw, but I must be in the wrong thing.
Right.
Okay, so I get up and go to another thing, and I walk up and down the aisles. Hey, you guys. And they're like, oh, we're over here. Okay, so now I join them. But I've missed the first half of that movie. So I watched the second half of, and I remember what that one was, The Lions. Oh, it's a great movie. The best actors. Duvall's in it, like Secondhand Lions.
Oh, okay.
But I'm only watching the second half. I have no idea, you know, what's going on. The whole point is this. Until you know the story from beginning to end, you don't really know the story. I ended up watching two movies that night and not knowing what either one was about because neither of them did I know the full story.
Well, and I can relate that to an experience you and I had together when I was going through a tough period in life, and I knew, thank God, I knew who to call, and I called you. And you asked me what I feel is a very important question. You said, you asked me, had I ever read the Bible? And I shared with you that I was brought up Catholic, I knew the Bible, I knew the general. And you reiterated, but have you read the Bible? And the honest answer at that point was no, I hadn't. Not in one sitting, not all together, and yeah. No, you know, it was a great, exactly what you're talking about with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And when I sat down and started reading the Bible and started studying God's Word and the truth and what is written in the Bible, and really not trying to shirk the responsibility, but really trying to apply it to not only my life on Sunday for an hour, but my life on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday and Saturday and, of course, Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, and it really is, if you don't understand the foundation, if you don't have the story, how can a person get it?
Yeah. Nah, there's no way.
No way.
That's right.
So, again, I invite our listeners, you know, those people that you run into that say, you know, I just don't get the Bible. I don't understand the Bible.
Yeah, they probably didn't read it.
Give them this yeah. address.
Yeah.
They'll get a better
Yeah, start them at page one and give them the podcast.
Right. Because that's what I love about what we're doing. You know, one of the things I should say that I love about what we're doing, but we're reading the Word of God.
That's right.
And thanks to you, Bob, and your studies and the diligence and the time and the effort that you've put in and expended, you can help our listeners, myself. I feel very fortunate to be in the position that I'm in, but you can help us digest this material.
Yeah.
So
and you know, what a joy for me. You know, don't paint the picture as like I'm some hero. I'm like... To me, it's like, what else would a person do? You know, if this really was real, mm-hmm. well, what else would I spend my time doing? So, of course, yeah, what a joy for me to be able, you know, imagine someday, as we talked about, like on the last podcast, you know, what's our vision of the promises God has made to us, and it's mm-hmm. like sitting at his table with them. What a joy to me for some person someday to stand before God and say, you know that guy, Bob, he helped me get that. So I'm glad. I would just be like, yes, victory, you know, that's everything.
And I think you're going to have more than one person standing in that line, Bob.
Well, if I do, that's just going to be a great day. Because what a broken vessel he's using to do that. But all that to say, I mean, is I don't feel that. Like, I just feel it as natural. Because of course you would do that, you know?
And study
and
the
I'm
word.
Flawed, you know? It's, when we say study and so on, yeah, I do that as much as I can possibly do it. Not to compete with people in the world with degrees or anything, just why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you avail yourself of every tool that God has used to help you understand his word?
Well, in a quick rabbit trail, I mean, not only do you study the word, but you've written a book, and it's
well, I got another one coming out. Come on now.
Yeah, you know, and it is the premise of the book is the word.
It's what we do here. It's just put in story form.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. It's historical fiction, and what a joy to do. And hopefully we can do many more. But, yeah, we're trying to reach people.
Well, and I think you're using the right tools, Bob. I think this method that we're using with the podcast, the book, you know, that's what we need to expend energy to share the word, right? It's not sitting here and just hoping it'll go out.
Yeah, that's right. You know, imagine the Lord, you know, asking us someday, so what'd you do? You know, I adopted you into my family when you were 15. What'd you do with the next 60 years? You know, oh, well, you know, I watched the Masters. I rooted for the Browns. The right team, by the way. Come on. What did you do?
It's the parable of the talents.
Yeah.
It really is. What did you do with the talents that were given you? And I challenge our listeners, you know, when you meet somebody that needs to hear the truth, don't be afraid and don't be shy to share it with them. And don't be afraid to send them to this podcast to you know, hear the word.
Yes.
So that being said, Bobo, should we dive in?
Let's dive in to Genesis chapter 16. Let's read it straight through, as is our habit. So we hope our listeners will remember where we've been up in the story until this point. We reviewed last time. But here we are, Genesis 16, verse 1. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, "Now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go in to my maid. Perhaps I shall obtain children through her." And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. After Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Abram's wife Sarai took Hagar, the Egyptian, her maid, and gave her to her husband Abram as his wife. He went in to Hagar. She conceived. And when he saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her sight. Sarai said to Abram, "May the wrong done me be upon you. I gave my maid into your arms, but when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her sight. May the Lord judge between you and me." But Abram said to Sarai, "Behold, your maid is in your power. Do to her what is good in your sight." So Sarai treated her harshly. She fled from her presence. Now, the angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur. She said, He said, "Hagar, Sarai's maid, where have you come from? "Where are you going?" She said, "I'm fleeing from the presence of my mistress Sarai." Then the angel of the Lord said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit yourself to her authority." Moreover, the angel of the Lord said to her, "I will greatly multiply your descendants, so that they shall be too many to count." The angel of the Lord said to her further, "Behold, you are with child, and you shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has given heed to your affliction. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand will be against him. He will live to the east of all his brothers." Then she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are a God who sees." For she said, "Have I even remained alive after seeing him?" Therefore the well was called Beer Lahai Roy. Behold, it is between Kadesh and Bered. So Hagar bore Abram a son. Abram called the name of his son whom Hagar bore Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to him.
So, as I was going through this Bible,
yeah,
something that I saw was a reflection of myself. And that is the impatience that, you know, that is shown with Sarah and saying, you know, I could fix this. You know, let me offer a solution. Let me tinker on the motor with you, God. And, you know, it's something that I think we all struggle with, you know, that we really want to get our hands in there and get involved with the will of God. And especially in this instance, as I was reading it, you know, Abraham has been promised this. There's a covenant made. He's how old and still nothing, still faithful. Sarah, not necessarily in the exact same boat, right? And then the other thing that I saw, and Abram listened to the voice of Sarah. And now you've taught me this. You've taught me how to be a reader of the Bible. And that, to me, echoed Adam and Eve. Am I in the right spot here? Am I...
Yeah, you're in the perfect spot. Okay, so Jamie, you really asked me two questions. And the first one, in my synthesis of what you were saying, boils down to trying to do God's work man's way. And the second one had to do with echoing Genesis.
Well, and really, yeah, and becoming impatient and trying to impart our own will on God's will, in a sense.
Yeah, so let's take them one at a time. The first one, is we talked about briefly before the podcast, I could have written down examples of ancient Near Eastern literature, of which we have an abundance, of marriage contracts. Within the contract itself, it will often say in the ancient Near East, you know, they didn't have fertility things. They can't go in there and do surgery and so on, right? There, so within the contract itself, it would say, there would be a clause quite often, hey, if you guys don't have kids, then it's the wife's responsibility to go get a surrogate, and she'll provide that for the husband. Husband will have kids there, but that'll be the wife's child,
right?
Even though it was through a surrogate. That was a clause in the contract itself. So as we, in the 21st century, read a chapter like this, we're going, man, this is nuts. You're going to give your maid to Abram? Well, that would have been standard procedure back then. Sarah's not doing anything other than, in one sense, on the one hand, fulfilling her responsibilities. I mean, she's...
To provide an heir.
Yeah, she's, hey, look, here's the way we humanly handle these kind of situations. You know, let's do this. So, on that purely human level, that's standard procedure. On a divine level, no. This is coming from you and Abram.
Right.
I haven't changed my plan.
Plan A is plan A.
It's plan A. Don't be trying plan B. You know, don't be thinking, I have failed.
Right. And that you need to pick up the ball.
Yeah, trust me. And that's, I have not handed off to you. Trust me.
And I got to tell you, Bob, I think, well, I know me, personally, I struggle there. So I just have a feeling that a lot of us struggle with that, you know. Yeah. So many times we hear this concept of let go, let God. How hard is that really to do?
Yeah. And that's a decent phrase as far as it goes. There's human responsibility, but he has not handed off. He's given no indication other than your own perception that a lot of time has gone by and you're getting older that he's dropped the ball.
Time's
but he hasn't.
Out.
He has not. You know, he's God. He can do this. And in fact, it's almost like him to wait till the odds are so improbable that it could only be him that could save the day, so that you would know this is purely from him, right? If Sarah's plan prevails, and they had the child through Hagar, and that becomes the heir, how easy is it from that point on to go, this is just us?
Right.
You know, it's nice that God said that, but we're actually doing.
Yeah, he's a good sextant. He points us in the right direction, but he's not a map.
Right, and that is so wrong. He's the author and the finisher of our faith. He's the guy with the ball. He's everything. So trust him. I mean, make sure you correctly discern his will. But for instance, one of the things we didn't say in our last podcast about Abram in chapter 15 was Moses is very clearly presenting him as a prophet.
Right.
You know, God is showing up to him, speaking directly to him. So Abram's a prophet, so the promise is not in doubt as far as its source. And quite often we think up our own visions, you know, oh, God gave me a vision for our church or whatever. Yeah, it's not, very rarely is that actually from God. Sorry to burst anybody's bubble out there. In my experience, I'm just telling you, we are so egocentric. We think God is talking to us all the time. He is in his word. He's not talking to you in the dreams and so on, and not in your heart and so on. But if you can identify the source as clearly from him, i.e. as in the word of God, then he's got it. He's got it completely. You don't need to manipulate that. He's got it. He will complete it. If you're thinking of your own vision, then you're doomed to walk in the path of trying to fulfill that on your own. But don't confuse your own vision with his. And this one that Abraham has is clearly from God. This is him. This is God himself saying, no, you're going to have a kid. I'll bring it about between you and Sarah. Not, you don't need to resort to the social institutions of the day.
Now, do I get a gold star for the second half?
That was very good.
And
the second half,
echo?
The echo of Genesis, you don't get a gold star. You get 100 gold stars. Let me read this to you. Here's a parallel. This is Genesis 16. The parallels from that, as opposed to Genesis 3, right? The serpent's attack that early. In Genesis 16, she said to, right? This is Sarai saying to. In Genesis 3, the woman said to. Genesis 16, Abram listened to Sarai. Genesis 3, you listen to your, when God starts talking to Adam, you listen to your wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
Back to Genesis 16, Sarai took. Back to Genesis 3, she took some. Genesis 16, and she gave her to her husband. Genesis 3, she also gave some to her husband. So as a reader, remember sitting down, you know, months have gone by since we did these early podcasts, but if you were just sitting down reading this, this would be, what, 15 minutes later?
Mm-hmm.
You're reading these words, and those initial words would be so fresh in your mind. This is a recapitulation of the initial attack.
Right.
Right, which we've talked about before. If the devil runs a play, and it's called the lie, and yeah, you take matters into your own hands, and that works, how often do you think he's going to run that play? right?
A 44 dive on set. We're not even going to wait for Hutt.
Yeah, until you defeat it, he's going to run that play. So here's the exact same play. And it works again. It's just God's going to trump it. But it works again.
Well, and you know the other consistency I see there, Bobo. Well, and I apologize. I just called you my pet name for you, Bobo, on our podcast. Your pet.
I've got some other pet names that are way worse than that, so I'm okay with that.
But buyer's remorse always is involved in that equation.
Mm-hmm.
There is always some type of buyer's remorse when you believe that lie or
yeah,
you know, down that road.
Yeah.
And then the jealousy again sets in. What did we have in Genesis 3? It was shame, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and here the same. Don't mistake this either. Remember when back in God's promise to Abraham in Genesis 12, when he said, "Those who curse you, I will curse." When it says here in this text in Genesis 16 that Hagar despised Sarah, that's the word, it's the same word for curse. Okay? Hagar cursed Sarah. In a sense, it's not an equivalent, it's the same word. It's a little subtle different meaning. It does mean despised, but it's the same root idea. This is not going to work out good for Hagar. You don't despise God's chosen prophet, Abram, and his wife, Sarah. As much as they might drop the ball, that's God's pick. You don't exalt yourself above her. Okay, even in the social customs of the day, the slave, whom, by the way, the text points out twice, is Egyptian. In other words, imagine the Israelites reading this as they're coming out of Egypt. Who's really slave to who, right? That's what Moses is telling them. You're bigger than the Egyptians. You're God's people. But regardless of that, even in the original contracts, the slave woman doesn't usurp the place of the wife. She's just the vehicle through which a child was born, but she doesn't become primary wife, for instance. So the fact that Hagar here is stepping out of her place, there's a sense in which Sarah's right, you know, hey, something's gone awry here. She shouldn't be despising me.
But there is still the sense of compassion for Hagar's plight at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Hagar did nothing wrong.
Right.
In and of her action. She was commanded to do this.
It's just attitude after.
Yeah, don't exalt yourself, Hagar.
Now, what's the quote-unquote, the deal with, may the wrong I have done be upon you, Sarah says to Abram. What does that mean?
What verse are you going to ask?
16:5. May the wrong I have done be upon you. What does that mean, Bob?
Well, may the wrong done me be upon, like, you're not defending me, is what she means. Hagar's making fun of me, and you're not shutting her up. You know, what's the deal? How come you're not defending me?
And may the Lord judge between us?
Yeah, she's bitter. Hey, Sarah's
bitter, huh?
Oh, yeah, a lot of bitterness.
Am I sensing the right?
You know, imagine, so you took the ball into your own hands, you got tackled for a 5-yard loss, and now you're blaming it on everybody else,
right,
you know?
Right.
It's just purely human nature, which I don't want to belittle. I mean, we can make fun about
right,
that.
Right.
You can see so many spousal things, you know, involved here. The real picture that God's putting down is when you humanly, purely human, you know, apart from Him, I mean by that, humanly, i.e. apart from God, try to take the ball and run with a promise that was in chapter 15,
right,
with a covenant with God, you're going to humanly take that ball and run with it, disaster. There's no way. No way. Humanity, apart from God, is demonic. And so they fall for this ploy again. Now there's terrible strife that's been with us to this very day. You pick up a newspaper today, and you're going to see Israel versus the Arabs on the front page. It's with us today. do not taste
since
it.
This time.
Since that time.
Now, where Abram said to Sarah, "Behold, your maid is in your power. Do to her what is good in your sight." And in the next line, so Sarah treated her harshly and she fled from her presence.
Yeah.
There's another spot, Bob, that I think us as lay people, we need help understanding that. Otherwise, we'll just gloss over it. There could be meaning there that we're missing. But, you know, what is going on there?
I guess I would say the meaning is so human. You know, Abram's like, hey, you're my wife. You know, I will defend that. So she's under your authority. So you deal with it. That's what he's saying. Now, imagine from his point of view. This is his kid.
Right.
Okay? Right. It's not Sarah's kid. Okay, so he's got an emotional investment in this kid. But he's not going to punt on Sarah. Right? So, okay, Sarah, you are my wife. I'll back you up. You know, you handle it. I'm the authority behind you. You deal with it as you see fit, and I'll back you up. Well, she's all, you know, it's all emotion.
Right.
Right? Oh, you've been an affront to me. You've despised me. You know, she treats her harshly. So harshly that Hagar's got to flee. And she's concerned for her life.
Now, which brings me, you know, great segue, brings me to the next question. So the angel of the Lord found her. That to me suggests a physical presence. Not
oh yeah, he shows up. Right. God shows up in the person of an angel.
Well, wait a second. Now back up a second.
Okay.
God shows up in the person of an angel. That was my next question, is this angel, because when God shows up, it identifies him as God.
Yeah.
This is identified as an angel of the Lord.
Yeah.
But yet, from, you know, verse 9 through 12, I believe it is.
Yeah.
There's some authority this angel speaks with.
Yeah.
He is some very definite authority.
I'm with you.
Who is this angel
of the Lord? All right, here's the deal. This has been debated since the day it was written. And it comes down to our age. Is this God himself and they're just describing it as an angel? Or is this an angel who's speaking for God? You know, what is it? This looks like a pretty big player in the game. I think most of that can be resolved by this. Again, we are 3,500 years, 3,500 years removed from this. You know, this is the ancient Near East. They don't have CNN. They don't have stuff like that, okay? They have representatives. When the king of Egypt, when Pharaoh wants to talk to the king of Babylon or one of the Canaanite kings, he doesn't go there and talk to him.
Right.
Okay? He sends an ambassador. So that, how much authority does that ambassador have? Well, 100%. When the ambassador says, okay, here's the deal, the other king would hear that as, okay, that's the king of Egypt telling me this. Okay, so the word for angel, melech, literally means messenger. Okay, so we translate that as angel because that's the usual sense of the term, but it fundamentally means messenger. So when it says the angel of the Lord, this is an angel who is speaking for God, such that it's what he's saying is directly from God. So you'll see some of the references, you know, hey, God said, and some of the references, I say, but that's one in the same. For an angel of the Lord.
Now, how many angels have that authority in Scripture? How many anybody?
That comes up in the Old Testament. The angel of the Lord, you see it a lot in the Samson episode. You'll see it in Zechariah. You'll see it a couple more times in Genesis. That's maybe 10 times in the Old Testament. And I'm rounding that off. I don't have that data right in front of me. But that's ballpark. Maybe 10 dozen times quote, the angel of the Lord will show up, Joshua, that happens in the early chapters of Joshua. So it happens about that many times, and it's God, I believe, literally sending an angel, hey, this guy speaks for me. So
is it any part of the Trinity at all? Is
that
it?
That came about later in time, and it was with the coming of the New Testament, and people were looking for explanations of Christ in the Old Testament. So often you'll see people say, well, see, this is a pre-incarnate, like before Jesus became flesh. This is a pre-incarnate Jesus showing up. I don't think so. You wouldn't run too far astray if you believe that. I don't think that's what's going on. I think it's mostly solved by realizing that in their culture, a representative of a king, an official representative, an ambassador, that was a big deal. You took that as from the king himself. So now, it's an angel, and he's speaking for God.
Now I'm going to jump by this donkey of a man part to continue on this subject. But she saw him and lived. And when I looked at the references here, the references spoke of, looking into the face of God. And
she's not, in other words, or she wouldn't be alive.
Gotcha.
You cannot do that. So
gotcha.
She's seeing an angel, but that itself is so powerful. I mean, that angel's from God. So it's very easy to take the picture that's behind the picture and think you're speaking to that.
Gotcha.
So
makes sense.
That's what's going on there.
And so that's why, because it's spoken of so many times that you cannot see the face of God because it'd kill you.
Yeah.
Moses
yeah, and
did.
It'll say, we'll get to those passages
right.
in time, but, Moses spoke to God face to face.
Adam.
Figure of speech. He wasn't. And now, Adam, pre-fall, may very well have been face to face with God, because at that point, Adam has no sin, and he could endure the very holy presence of God. Once sin has entered the human race, you can't be face to face with him.
Noah.
Even Jesus, no, not Noah. Even Jesus was veiled, right? In Matthew 17, the transfiguration, they see him for what he really is, and he's like shines like the sun. And they just cover their face and bow down. I mean, they can't endure that. So even Jesus' flesh veiled, in a sense, who he was.
So that really gives us an idea into who this angel is. It gives us an insight.
That's right. And the scriptural designation for him is angel of the Lord. In other words, this is his direct ambassador.
Cherubim?
Probably. It's interesting you would say that. The cherubim is a rank of angel, we might say. That cherub, the I-M on the end of cherubim, is their equivalent to our S. So plural.
Mm-hmm.
Cherub would
gotcha.
Be singular. And that comes from their root word karav, which means to be near. So those were the angels nearest to God, and we suspect nearest in rank.
Right.
Those were the generals.
In our terms, rank in our terms.
In our terms, that's right. But they are ranked. To say our terms does not hopefully diminish the fact that in Hebrew terms they would rank things as well. So a cherub, like for instance, Satan is a cherub.
Mm-hmm.
And then another rank would be seraph, and we would say that seraphim. Okay, the I am, again, is just plural. So seraph means to be the burning ones, and they were very close as well to God. Probably not as close as the karav, the nearest ones. So cherubs would be the highest ranking, seraphim would be the next ranking, and so on. The clearest reference you have to that is like Ephesians chapter 6, where Paul describes principalities and powers and dominions and so on, which are clearly ranking terms. So we don't know how to characterize that exactly, but this is a powerful guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't send, the sixth, seventh, eighth ranking guy. This is a pretty big guy.
Well, a couple of things I noticed. He had enough dominion, enough power to name Ishmael.
That's a great observation.
I've only seen that a couple of times.
That is great, Jamie. Naming, Yes, naming is huge in the scriptures. For all those still in childbearing years, I could probably do my job a while longer. It might be harder on Kathy. But for those still having children, be really wise in how you name your kids. I mean, it sort of sets their destiny. It's very scriptural to be careful about names. So the fact, just like you pointed out, that this angel could name what Ishmael... Yeah, he's real high. He speaks directly for God. Mm-hmm. Directly.
And again, creating a nation through Ishmael.
That's right. And the name itself, God hears. Right, so the plea, imagine, in a broader context what we're talking, so for anybody listening, if you think, oh, you're so insignificant, you don't rank, whoa, you're the image of God. Hagar, the Egyptian maid, subordinate to Sarah, still God hears her. Any person in his image, he's very concerned with how you feel, what's going on. Right, trying to rescue you. So he appears to Hagar, hey, I got this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now, wild donkey of a man. Wow. I don't think I've ever heard a description like that.
As many names as I've been called down through the years, that I have never been called a wild donkey of a man. That's I think what they're driving at there with that description, I guess, from the context and from what happens in history, not sociable in the sense that you're not part of the big human systems of development. You're more of a nomad. You're going to live alone. And you still see that today, the Arabs are not really associated with any given nation. We may say Muslim, for instance, but Arab itself almost equates in our terms to wanderer.
Well, now, wait, back up. So Ishmael, if I'm hearing you correct, Ishmael is the father of the Arabs?
That's right.
As Abraham is the father of the Israelites.
That's right. And those are separate lines. This was not the child of... Ishmael's not the child of the promise. He's not the child of the covenant. He's not the seed of the woman.
Is he the seed of the serpent?
Well, it depends. Like we say, individuals can change their course.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So individual Arabs may be. But Arab as a whole, no, that's not part of the main deal. But no more, no less a part of that than an American might be less a part. You know what I mean? It's every individual has to make his choice. But, this is a race set aside on account of Abraham's prestige. Who he is at this point in history, the prophet of God, the chosen one. Okay, you're from Abraham's loins, but you're not the promised seed.
Right.
But you're going to get protected here.
So blessed.
In a sense, you sort of get grafted into a stream of the promise. You're not the full heir. But any individual could make that jump into full heir, full child of God. But no, this is a separate race. And a donkey of a man, you're going to be in the wilderness. You're going to be opposed to different societies. You're not going to be a great nation in and of yourself, so to speak. That's what he's driving at.
Now, east of his brothers.
East,
you taught
again,
me. I've got two different...
Yeah, east, not
wondering.
Good.
Right.
Is that
literal or spiritually? Spiritually?
Both. Both. Not good. To be heading out east from the promise is not good.
From the beginning, east was
as
not
early,
good, right?
Yeah, as early as... Genesis 3, right? Kicks them out of the garden. They have to go east. Not good.
But Hagar believes God, would you say? That's a tough one.
Well, there's not really a statement made about them. She curses Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good indication of where you stand. Right?
That
she does not submit.
Appears to her.
Sarah does. Yeah, I'll get to that in a second. Hagar does not submit to God's created plan here. Not good.
Mm-mm.
Not good. So, you know, the fact that God shows up and shows her grace does not mean, you know, God's not like this God of punishment guy. Yes, ultimately, that ball is going to rest in his court. He does send people to hell. There is such a place as that. He does banish those who don't believe him there. But it's not his primary attribute. I mean, his primary attribute is grace. Right? He's trying to help Hagar here. But that doesn't mean, then, that Hagar is part of the promise.
Right. It's not a get-out-of-jail-free card.
No,
it's not a hall pass.
No, and the fact that people today, you know, say you live in the United States, a nation that God has blessed, does not mean you're grafted into the tree of faith at all. You need to make every effort to get grafted into that tree.
Keyword effort.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you're, okay, God's, you know, nice to you. He may well be. That doesn't mean you're in his family.
Well, and it's as we bring to a close this episode, effort is important, as you've taught me, Bob. This doesn't just happen by osmosis. I can't just hold the Bible on my lap and it's just going to filter into me. It takes work, and not only, you know, and my observation, not only does it take work in learning the word, but implementing the word is equally
maybe
it requires as much energy.
Yep, there's a rough analogy, a little bit rough, but I think serviceable in this case. Any relationship is like that.
Yes.
You know, anybody who's been married, you know, you can tell your wife you love them all you want. And it's nice that you do that. If you're not backing that up with actions that display that love, it falls on deaf ears.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people cannot just count on God's love for them as then that equates to, okay, I'm in God's family. God loves everybody. Everyone who's made in his image, you know, he will show favor to an extent. That doesn't mean you're in his family.
Right.
And the evidence that you are in his family is displayed in your deeds. Right, your labor of love. If you have been at some point in your life adopted into his family, that'll show up. You'll do things that will display that love, regardless of what the world thinks of them.
Back to what we said in the last podcast. Those who are from me know my voice. They hear me.
That's right.
And it's you and I have talked about that, but I know, you know, for our listeners, I know all of us have at least experienced this once, where you hear God talking to you. You know that's, you recognize the voice.
Mm-hmm.
You recognize it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I think about it, that should be a very comforting feeling, that you're able to recognize his voice.
Yeah, that's right.
Because how alone would that feel not to be able to hear his voice? I feel like being in the dark, in the middle of the forest, with nothing.
That's right. That's right. So let's, as the wind rages around, it is a windy day. For anybody listening, that's, man, my garbage can was blown 50 yards down the street today. It's still blowing. This is 24 hours. I couldn't even sleep last night. It was
all
blowing
night
so
it
hard.
Blew.
So let's say a prayer in the midst of this storm. Lord, even as your wind blows, Jesus has pointed out the similarity between the wind and the Spirit of God in John chapter 3. So we just think of your own Spirit providing, interwoven with your words, providing power. So, as you send out these words, this day, on this podcast, imbue them with your power. May every listener feel the power of God through these words and respond with a labor of love. In Jesus' name.